Welcome to Panelcast, Forbidden Panels podcast featuring comic books, video games, and movie news and reviews. And now, your host, AJ Herrera.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 137 of the Panelcast. This is AJ, and I'm here this week once again with Mr. Anthony White.
Hey, everybody.
Anthony seems to have gotten over his con flu, so it's good to have you back on the show.
I survived.
Yay! And there you go, coughing, so. In this week's episode, I will be reviewing Ant-Man, as well as a new novel series that I'm starting. We'll be covering the news and some other wonderful things. We really don't have much this week, but we're going to do our best to at least try to entertain you for half an hour. So, we have all that and less after we come back from our first break.
Hey guys, this is Dan.
And this is Jen.
We're your hosts on The Road Ahead.
Add us on Facebook and find out about some of the interesting, odd, and amazing places you can visit on your next road trip.
Just go to www.facebook.com/The Road Ahead Series. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Road Ahead Series, or simply follow us at Road Ahead Series.
Thanks, and we'll see you on The Road Ahead. Now back to the Panelcast.
Welcome back, everybody. It's time again for your favorite segment and mine. Well, maybe just mine. We're going to hit you with some news. What have you got, AJ?
It's funny that you say this is your favorite segment when you can never find any news to talk about.
Well, it's my favorite segment to listen to. I like learning about things that I may not have come across.
But you never listen to the podcast, so how can it be something new to listen to? You just like to hear me talk.
Come on. What do we got?
First news story I got coming up here is something that's been out there for a couple weeks now. But since we haven't done a show in a while, I thought I'd bring it up. Everybody and me seems to be excited about the new DC Legends of Tomorrow show that's coming up on the CW. It's both the spinoff of Arrow and The Flash. Well, a little bit of news has come out about it, and it may pop some bubbles there for people. Showrunner Phil Klemmer tells Screen Rant to expect the show to be akin to Game of Thrones, Spooks, and 24, or The Walking Dead, and that the ensemble nature of the cast allows for random deaths and departures of major characters, ends which will not be reversed. Added to that, this is the show that will have an anthology-style nature, with each season being a self-contained limited event series, with no Missions of the Week episodes. Rather, a series of long serialized arc. Now, while the next season will push on with the narrative setup, you'll have some characters joining and some departing from year to year. Elements of the storyline are being set up in both the new seasons of Arrow and The Flash, which will return in October. So basically that means the lineup that you're seeing now that they're advertising for and they're pushing hard for could change two episodes in, one episode in, at any point in time. So don't get invested in any one character. Now, I kind of find that exciting because I'm a big, huge Game of Thrones fan, and I've learned that I don't like any character on there, and it's okay if all of them die. So I'm okay if the same thing happens on this show now. But I still find it amusing. Like, how sad does it be that, you know, you're telling this cast, hey, come to Comic-Con, come to all these press releases. It's going to be awesome. Granted, you're going to be dead the first episode, but come on out. But it also explains why Steve Amell's brother, who plays Firestorm in the series, has not been given any credit whatsoever in the upcoming cast, being that his partner, and they said that Firestorm himself, will be in the show. So we could be finally getting some answers on that end.
That is a very interesting development.
Indeed. What do you have, Anthony?
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
I was just going to comment, but I can move. I can move forward. I can move forward. Since we started with TV, I'll stick with TV. And while yours is interesting, mine is just depressing for me. According to an article from TV Line, and I quote, "The jig is almost up for Lucas Hood. Although unconfirmed by Cinemax, TV Line has learned exclusively that Banshee's upcoming 8-episode fourth season will be the show's last." That's depressing on a whole host of levels. I absolutely love Banshee. It's one of those shows that a lot of people don't hear about, a lot of people don't know about, and the people that I've introduced to it have just binged on it once they got a hold of it. So it's gotten crazier and crazier season upon season, and yes, it was obvious that they couldn't keep it up forever, but with some of the promo stuff coming out for season 4 and the way season 3 ended and where things look like they might be going, ending it after just 8 more episodes just seems horrible to me. I'm hoping for a groundswell of fan support to maybe force a 5th season or something. But as of right now, it looks like we've got 8 more episodes.
And, you know, to two comments that I have on that report. First off, you kind of answered your own question at the beginning in the fact that not a lot of people know about it, not a lot of people talk about it. Well, I mean, that's obviously why it's probably getting canceled. I am a huge fan of the show. In fact, I think I'm the one that got you hooked on it.
Yep.
So much so that Anthony and I binge-watched this entire last season the day before going to Comic-Con and even parts of being at Comic-Con just so we can talk about it. Huge fans. I can't get over how much I love the action and the fighting and everything in this show. But the second point I wanted to make to your comment was the fact that Eliza Dushku is cast for this season. Is she the show killer? You know?
I don't
being
know.
Her reputation on the past TV shows that she's shown up on. Possibly, but if there's one thing I will be grateful for that if they're able to pull off, is we might actually finally get to see her naked. Because I don't know of anybody in Banshee that has not been naked yet.
I'm not holding my breath. I also don't know if you can peg her as a show killer. It's, well, maybe. Maybe a little bit. But I don't know. We were coming to a head with things, you know? So if we get things wrapped up nicely, then maybe I'll feel satisfied, but I'm curious. We haven't seen Eliza Dushku in hardcore action stuff in a while now. I want to see how she adds to this show. So,
well, the fact that they killed out of a lot of major characters in the last season,
yeah, they did,
kind of, you know, pushes us that way. But the last time I saw, they had been renewed for 2 more seasons because, you know, Cinemax is getting huge accolades for the show, and, you know. In case you haven't had a chance to watch it or are aware of it, there are webisodes that go along with each season, which kind of ties together the seasons or sometimes ties together the episodes, and comic books based on the season or on the series as well. So hopefully, at least in some medium, we'll still get our Banshee fix, but it's not going to be the same in comic books as it is on TV. You know, you can't get that hardcore action and the exhaustion that the characters feel after every fight scene that you do on TV in comics. It just doesn't translate well.
It's fantastic. I'm going to hold out hope for more, but I digress. We must move on.
I guess. Going on with TV shows, the USA Network has greenlit the comic book-based drama Brooklyn Animal Control from Universal Cable Productions and IDW Entertainment. The story follows the inner workings of a secret subdivision of the NYPD that functions as social services for the Vled Ulf, a highly insular community of werewolves. The drama explores city politics, immigrant communities, and families divided by ambition, secrecy, and tradition. David S. Goyer, Rick Jacobs, and David Alpert were produced. I wonder if people are spying on our Forbidden Panel meetings, because this sounds almost exactly like Disciples of the Moon. However, I will buy the comic book and read it and watch it on TV, because I'm a comic geek and I love werewolves, and I'm currently writing a werewolf story myself, so there you have it.
Okay, it looks like I'm moving away from TV. And this one falls a little bit more into the could-be-couldn't-be category than rock-solid news. But it looks like Channing Tatum may not be lined up to play Gambit in a future X-Men movie. A few months ago, Rise of the Planet of the Apes director Rupert Wyatt came on board to direct, and in October 2016, release date was locked in for the standalone Gambit film. At last report around Comic-Con a few weeks ago, things seem to be progressing smoothly and production has been in the process of testing young actresses for the female lead, including Spectre actress Lea Seydoux. News report came out from The Wrap, which says Tatum's deal is in jeopardy of falling apart and he is planning to exit the project. So, I don't know how everybody else feels about that. I know how I feel about it, but I'm kind of biased. I do want to see Gambit. I've always loved the character, a standalone film, and just the attitude and the way he carries himself. I can't wait to see it portrayed. I honestly don't think Channing Tatum ever fit that role. So, I don't know. If the one of the glitches with it, though, is that Tatum is attached to the project as a producer. So if his role starring falls through, he may very well pull out entirely, which could kill the project.
I personally have no opinion one way or another. I'm not a huge Channing Tatum fan, except, you know, when he doesn't take himself too seriously. But the one thing I will say about him is, much like Ryan Reynolds' passion for Deadpool, Channing Tatum had a passion for this project as well. Even going as far as sitting down with past Gambit actor, whose name I can't remember off the top of my head right now, and ask him about the pressures and whatnot of Taylor Kitsch. Asking him about the pressures and whatnot of trying to portray the character and what to do and what not to do. And, you know, both acknowledging the fact that Taylor Kitsch didn't do that great of a job either. The one thing that does boggle me is the fact that at Comic-Con, he got brought on stage with the rest of the Marvel family. You know, big to-do was done about it. There's posters of it. There's magazine covers, banners, and advertisements, the whole nine of him being a part of the Marvel family now. And he's even gone and earned my respect. I believe we talked about this on the last show. He earned my respect with the fact that he helped Stan Lee off stage when nobody else would. At the end of Stan Lee's part on stage during the panel, he was having trouble getting down the stairs. He's 94 years old. And Channing Tatum was the only person to stop taking a selfie, stop being wrapped up in the whole glitz and glam of being on stage, and went over and helped an old man down the stairs. So in that aspect, he earned my respect, and which told me that not only does he give a crap about the community, maybe even the role, but even he's just a human being who helped an old man down the stairs. So I was kind of excited to see what he would do with this role in that way. So to see that all this work is getting put on for it and it's not going to go anywhere, it has me wondering if it's a true story or not, or what's going to happen after this.
Well, we have a lot of this, though. When you consider the fact the production company behind this one is 20th Century Fox, Fox has the rights to this. And a lot of Fox's projects, they get shelved.
No. Can't. Fox does not own full rights. They have shared rights, much like they have shared rights with Spider-Man now as part of the agreement that they made with Marvel.
Okay. I am hopeful that it will go through. I want to see it. I want to see what they do with it. Is it just... I don't know.
Right. You're torn because it's Channing Tatum.
Yes, exactly. That is it, exactly.
That's the problem. Like, oh, X-Men movie, Gambit movie, Channing Tatum?
Uh-huh. The guy has never won me over on screen. It's like I haven't watched enough interviews with him to know how he is as a human being, but none of his roles have ever wowed me on screen. So seeing a guy that I'm not real fond of cast as a character I've always loved, it worries me. It's like, I want it, but at the same time, I'm scared.
Agreed. And moving on from characters that we've loved, Mark Hamill is set to reprise his role as the voice of the Joker in the upcoming Batman the Killing Joke, a DTV animated adaptation of the iconic Alan Moore graphic novel. Hamill has voiced the character in Batman the Animated Series and in Batman Arkham video games, and Hamill was asked several weeks ago about the possibility, but couldn't say. Sources have since talked with Collider and confirmed that Hamill has already recorded his voice acting for the film. The project is due for a direct-to-video release next year. Now, what's funny about this is in the past week or so, Hamill has been online on the social media networks saying, hey, I'd really love to do this. I'd really love to. You sly motherfucker. You already knew you were doing it.
He was building buzz.
Building buzz. He didn't have to do that. He's already going back in as Luke Skywalker. He's making the money.
He's got marketing. The buzz. He's marketing.
Marketing my ass. Don't get me wrong. Mark Hamill as Joker is the right choice. It will always be the right choice. And I'm happy for it. But, you know, he's such a shady motherfucker now. You're such a trickster, Mark Hamill.
Hey, that is the voice we all wanted for that role.
So, no.
You know what? I can't complain if he's priming the pump, so to speak.
Oh, no, absolutely, I agree. What was funny is earlier today, I was doing laundry, and there were two gentlemen in the laundromat. I called them gentlemen because, you know, in a mocking way. But they were discussing this project and everything that was upcoming about it, and they were stating that, you know, they brought up a couple good points. One was that there's not a lot of action in this story. And two, they're afraid that not a lot is going to be shown as far as, you know, things that happened to Barbara Gordon and everybody else.
Yeah.
Properly in this animated feature. And my answer to that is, obviously you guys have not watched any of the DC animated features recently. Because if there's one thing I'm sure of is DC is not afraid to go there.
That's true.
Especially with the Gods and Monsters that we watched this past weekend. You know, death and killing and General Zod delivering my favorite line I've ever heard another character say. I'm going to bless her seed with my eminence. That's just hot right there. I don't care what you got to say about that. So I am not worried about anything, especially now that they've confirmed Mark Hamill going in. I'm down for it and excited. I just wish they would do Arkham Asylum already. Just can't wait to read that one or see that one.
Too many great Batman stories.
Absolutely. So that's going to wrap us up for this segment. We'll go ahead and take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be doing some reviews.
Hi, this is Justin White with Necrosapien Press. Why don't you come down and check out the website at necrosapien.net. You can see all my latest artwork and projects, and we'll have a store up soon where you can buy prints of my art. Thanks.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I think it's time now for a little bit of reviews. AJ, what have you got?
I have a headache.
Well, that isn't a review. That's more of a statement of fact.
No, I was reviewing the fact that I have a headache.
Okay.
So that should count. I recently, in looking up stories a couple weeks ago, I came across one about a book series that was being made into a TV show. And the description of the book series and TV show caught my eye, especially when noted that the director of the series and the promoter of the series, the producer of the series, had stated that while the TV series may take certain elements from the books, it's not going to be anything at all like the books. So in as offended as I was by that, I realized I'd never read the series before to be offended, so why not check out the series? So I did. The series is called The Sudden Reach Trilogy. It's written by Jeff Vandermeer. And the first book is Annihilation, so I picked it up and took a look at it, and 3 hours later, I was done with it. Not that it's a short book. I think it was about 150, 200 pages on my Adikyo app, but it was just that engrossing that I didn't care about anything else. I sat there for 3 hours and finished this book. What's cool about the book series is that all three books were released in 1 year. All three of them came out last year, so much like The Green Mile when Stephen King released it, you know, short books here and there, but continued on throughout the year so that you didn't have to wait for the trilogy to finish. That's what Jeff Vandermeer did with this series. Annihilation is the first book in this series, and here's how Wiki describes it. The book describes a team of four, a biologist, an anthropologist, a psychologist, and a surveyor, who set out in an area known as Area X. This area is abandoned and cut off from the rest of civilization. They are the 12th expedition. The other expedition has been fraught with disappearances, suicides, aggressive cancers, and mental trauma. The novel won the 2014 Nebula Award for Best Novel and 2014 Shirley Jackson Award for Best Novel. The inspiration for Annihilation, the Southern Reach trilogy, was a 14-mile hike through St. Mark's National Wildlife Refuge in northern Florida. Many of the animals and vegetation that Vandermeer had seen on the hike over the past 17 years have appeared in the novel. He has said that someday he hopes to do a Weird Nature anthology as well. This book is awesome. That's all I can say about it. It's written in a journal prose. So it's like you're reading the journal written by one of the characters in the book, and she goes through everything. The journal itself is basically, I'm about to leave, so here's what happened. I hope you find this journal and don't have to deal with the same shit I did. Boom. In reading the book, I realized that it has the same kind of qualities as Event Horizon did for a space movie, but this is more grounded on Earth, and that the area they're investigating is called Area X, and it randomly popped up some 20 years prior to the novel, and nobody knows what it's about. And Area X itself doesn't really get an explanation until you start reading the book. So I don't want to give away too much, except to say that it is weird, creepy, science fiction-y, horror and mystery all wrapped into one, and just very well written. I'm already about 30 pages into the second novel, which is called, I can't remember. No, that is not the name, but that's the truth. It's called I Can't Remember. Authority. And once I'm done with that, I sure I will have no problem going into the third book, Acceptance. So, if you haven't had a chance, please check it out. It's awesome series. Anthony, I think it's one you yourself will appreciate.
More things to add to my ever-growing reading list.
Right. Luckily, like I said, both these books are very, very short. They're almost like novellas. So they're a very fast read. Like I said, the first one I went through in like 3 hours. So luckily, my wife had broken in her ankle, and we were in the emergency room for a while. So that's when I finished this book.
Okay. I think I can find a few hours to burn through something like that. It sounds like an interesting read.
It is. And in contrast to the kind of book that you've read.
Books. Lots and lots of books. But I've recently started diving into a Dean Koontz series called Odd Thomas. And yes, he has Netflix to thank for my initial interest in this story. I came across that movie on Netflix when I had never heard about the series before. Just off the top, Odd Thomas is the title of the very first book, and it's also the name of the protagonist of the entire series. He's an interesting character. He starts out a 20-year-old short order cook who sees ghosts, and he can't help but do something about it, which is actually kind of awesome. So the series has a very strange feel to it in that you're following around this 20-year-old whose life's greatest ambition is to be a short order cook, but at the same time he's
or tire salesman.
No. His greatest ambition is to be a short order cook. If he is planning for a bigger future than he actually sees for himself, he thinks about tire sales. Or shoes. Because, you know, a family may have one car, which means four tires, but a family of five has 10 feet. So, you know, shoes. But it's an interesting series. It's a great read, actually. And I was reminded of something I'd forgotten because it's been a long time since I read any of Koontz's work. He's one of those very rare authors who is not afraid to use the English language. Meaning words that other people shy away from because their audience won't really know what it means. He throws them out there like it's nothing. It's great because it's vocabulary building, but at the same time, it reminds me that our language is bigger than the couple of hundred words that it's been summed down to on the internet. But that's more about Koontz's writing style than about the book itself. The books take place, they're from the point of view of Odd Thomas, which means you live a lot inside this guy's head, and he is your narrator. And oh my God, is he an untrustworthy narrator. Because the books are written as sort of after-action reports. So you're getting it from his perspective as it happens, with foreknowledge of how it's all going to end. So the foreshadowing is very strange, and he deliberately hints at what might happen just to kind of draw you along. But I don't know. The books, they are not short. They're not a short read. They're time consuming. But I've gone completely through the first three, which is Odd Thomas, Forever Odd, and Brother Odd. And I'm working on book four, Odd Hours. And first book, in my opinion, completely awesome. The way it was set up, I'm not going to give you any details, whether you've seen the movie on Netflix or not, but it was pretty close on Netflix. It plays a lot better in print than it did on the screen, though. So it's, for the kind of story it is, it's fast-paced. There are things happening regularly, and you're moving along. He's doing his little detective work, which is interesting for a short-order cook. And it's all takes place in his tiny little desert town of Pico Mundo. Book two, also set in Pico Mundo, a little bit off for me. It didn't have the exact same, it didn't have the feel that the first one did. It wasn't quite as engrossing. Brother Odd, he got out of Pico Mundo to a monastery. And it gets to the point where he becomes the proverbial boy with his dog, and it's actually just a great story. So far, the series has really hit it on the head as far as emotional high and low points and making you feel for characters, and there are a ton of characters outside of Odd Thomas himself that you grow to care for. It's, the series itself is 7 books long, and I'm trying to work my way through it, and I'm actually happy to work my way through it. It's just taken me a while. If you like detective stories, if you like untrustworthy narrators, if you like narrators with a sense of humor about themselves, capable of laughing at themselves, if you aren't afraid of the breadth of the English language, it is worth a read. It's worth your time.
If you like fat guys with 6 fingers.
Not just fat. Extremely fat. Who are also highly successful, what does he write? Detective novel writers. Yeah, Little Ozzy is just fantastic. it's definitely worth a read. I mean, it's not going to be for everybody. It might be a little slow for people. It might not draw some people in, but the characters are fantastic, the setting is interesting, and it's definitely worth a couple of days of your time.
Yeah, I've too have read at least Odd Thomas. Again, I was brought in by 2 different factors. 1, my wife was reading the series, and 2, I caught the, because she was reading the series, I paid attention to the film that was being made, and so I was able to catch it on Netflix when it was released. And I can say this, I like the book better for obvious reasons, but the main reason is when I watch the movie, I feel like a kid watching Pokemon. Like, there's so much going on that at the end of the movie, I'm just like, what the hell just happened?
It paces a lot better in text.
Right. It paces a lot better in the book, and what you don't realize is everything is happening in a day. And so, yeah, there's a lot happening to this character. But at the same time, you know, you can put the book down at the end of a chapter and not feel as rushed as you do at the end of the movie. So in that aspect, you know, I really like the books better and I want to read it. In fact, I was reading the rest of the next book until I heard about the book I recently reviewed, Annihilation, and stopped to read that book. So yeah. So there. Moving on to my next review. Last week saw the release of what I have to think to be one of the, well, I don't want to say as fun as Guardians of the Galaxy, but pretty close up there, and that was Ant-Man. I sat back to watch it, being a huge comic book geek, you know, of course I know all about Scott Lang, Henry Pym, the whole Pym Particles and the anthology that is Ant-Man. So I went to go check out the movie, knowing, of course, it would be nothing like any of the stories I grew up on. And, you know, I was right in that aspect. However, I gotta tell you, man, this movie is a lot of fun. It is a heist movie with an origin story behind it. It's a little bit of leverage with a bunch of tech in it. And I thought it was going to be more serious because, you know, every time you saw Paul Rudd in the commercials or whatnot, he wasn't being Paul Rudd that we know. However, going into the movie and stuff, I saw he had his little quips in there, his little quirks, and did what he had to do just to maintain your tension. And Michael Pena was great in delivery with his comedy stuff too. But the action, and it was a really, really cool movie. And there's not much more I can say about it without giving it away. I will tell you that there are two after credits scenes, and both of them are really worth the time sitting and waiting, holding onto your pee while you're waiting for the credits to roll to watch these things. Michael Douglas did a great job. Judy Greer was in it. A surprise to me that Wood Harris was in it. If you've ever seen The Wire, you know who Wood Harris is. Evangeline Lilly. Now I'm excited to see her in more movies, more Marvel Universe movies. It ties directly into The Avengers Part 2. It's a great Marvel film, and it was a lot of fun. So I know a lot of you have already seen it because it's already breaking records everywhere. But if you haven't seen it, Anthony, then you should head out there and check it out while you can.
I'll have to get out there and take a look. It sounds like a lot of fun.
It's worth the big screen. It's worth the big screen viewing. And yeah, like I said, it's. I will give away this one part, but it's not really giving anything away. There's a part where Ant-Man and Yellow Jacket are fighting. This has got to be one of my favorite parts in the film. And Yellow Jacket says, "I'm going to disintegrate you." Well, they happen to be fighting in a purse and a telephone. The iPhone goes, "Playing Disintegration by The Cure," and starts playing Disintegrate by The Cure while they're fighting because of what Yellow Jacket had said. So as a big Cure fan growing up, I was like, yeah, you know. But it was a awesome, funny part. So that's the kind of humor and stuff you can look forward to seeing.
So it sounds like they didn't take themselves overly seriously with this one.
No, and the graphics were awesome. And it has been everybody that all the critics and everybody that's online and movie reviewers, newspapers, all nine, have all said that the CGI at the beginning of the movie is the best that they've ever seen in any movie ever. And you'll understand when you see it, because I can't give too much away again. But that opening part CGI is hands down, if it's not up for an Oscar, then there's something wrong.
Wow. Okay, that alone deserves a big screen treatment then.
Right. So that's it. If you haven't seen Ant-Man, go see it. Again, Annihilation, great book. I'm working on the second book. Odd Thomas series. Anthony's reading that, and we're excited to keep reading. I mean, really, the only comic book thing we reviewed was Ant-Man. But
oh, wow.
The books that we are reviewing are comic book style, so they should be taken seriously.
Yes, very seriously. And that wraps us up for reviews this week. So we'll be back to wrap things up for you right after this break.
Hey, I'm Penn from Mostly Harmless Entertainment. Come check out all our cool videos and movies that we do at mostlyharmlessent.com. You can also find us on YouTube at YouTube/mostlyharmless. Check out all the cool stuff we're doing around Redlands and IE and California and Washington and the world stuff. Okay, bye.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Panelcast. So that wraps up another episode of the show. Wow, look at me coughing all over the place. Anthony got me sick via Skype.
Yep,
via Skype. Just so you guys know. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Please check us out on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and all the other places, Pinterest and all those wonderful places. If you haven't had a chance, please check out our new episode of Artist Spotlight, which just went up this week, where I sit down with Richard Duran for a good hour and talk about all the creepy things that make him tick. I think it's a good interview. I'm sure you may think so, too. Head over to the store when you get a chance. All his stuff is on Artist Spotlight. We have 4 prints that he's put out available on sale right now. And it's great, great, phenomenal work. You know, just take a chance and go check it out. Where we'll be in 2 weeks, we'll be back to offer you more show, more reviews, and more recordings, and possibly more Anthony.
Possibly. No, I'll be here. I will be here. I survived the con flu. I am still recovering thanks to going directly back to work, but I'm still recovering. And also be sure to stop by the Forbidden Panel website, check out news, reviews, all the interesting articles that we post in the interim.
Real quick, though, Anthony, minute or less, your thoughts of Comic-Con?
Minute or less. It was a fun time. There were a crap load of people. There was some interesting stuff going on, but with all the conventions I've been to in the last few months, none of the panels were really of interest to me, and I wasn't about to wait 4 to 6 to 12 hours to get into Hall H or any of the halls to watch any of the previews of upcoming stuff. But otherwise, it was a good time. I had a lot of fun. It was worth it, and I spent way too much money. This is Anthony, and for AJ, thank you for tuning in this week, and we'll be back with another episode of the Panelcast for you all in a couple of weeks.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.